I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
She goes into a vision here and she thinks to herself, man, it's a good thing we're not in my childhood bedroom when we're at this like random meeting place in Urethiru. I was like, all right, Brandon, like just give us the scene. We know what's coming. Just. I thought it was really funny. Welcome back to Following Know It All, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 252, and we are in chapters 72 through 75. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. Excited to talk more about Winded Truth and the exciting characters and story we have going on in here. Before we hit record, we actually had like a 30-minute conversation and argument about artificial intelligence, which was great, but I feel like a completely different podcast than Following Know It On. So here we are, Following Know It On.
30 minutes. You need to check your clock. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great, as always. Excited to talk about this. Yeah, I guess comment below if you are for or against the use of AI. We don't need to get into it. Well, yeah, we did have a fun conversation about it. It's all the rage nowadays, you know, super fun. I'm doing great. Excited to dive in. We have lots of Zeth stuff this week. Always exciting. It has lived up to this being Zeth's book. That's for sure.
That's true. I mean, especially compared to last book where it was Venli's book, but it was actually like more than half Navani's book. So she kind of stole it from Venli. But
exactly. Yes,
this one's definitely Zeth's book. Do we have a brief summary for 72 through 75, Elliot?
Yes, I do have a summary for you. And 72 starts in a Syl point of view, which we don't get that very often, but she is continuing the scenes where she has helped Zeth solve the riddle and defeat the Lightweaver honor bearer, but she realizes that there was more to the riddle and she signals Kaladin just at the last second and saves him from a sneak attack by the Truth Watcher honor bearer, who had teamed up with the Lightweaver honor bearer to kind of double whammy on Zeth. So good thing Syl and Kaladin were there to save the day. They do take down both those heralds though. So now we're up to 6 honor blades collected, which is, I've got to start getting pretty heavy to lug those around all over the place. Second half of chapter 72 jumps back over to Shallan, Relaine, and Renarin, who are, they're kind of talking about what do we do now. They're talking about the physics of how the spiritual realm works, and they're trying to figure out can we look into some visions. Shallan is still struggling with some of the things that she's struggling with. Pattern is having some long conversations with her about it. Chapter 73, another flashback with Zeth, a little bit of a time jump though, 2-year time jump with our flashback Zeth. He's defeating all the swordsmen around him. He's winning all the accolades. He's the next bright rising star amongst all the shamans and acolytes, and is drawing the attention of the Will Shapers and his Elfcaller shaman that he's following. And he's kind of picked to go on this pilgrimage to replace the Windrunner honor bearer is the mission he is given. His father decides to go with him on this pilgrimage, and his sister very much against going on this pilgrimage and feels like Zeth is dragging their father around behind him wherever he goes. Chapter 74 is Sigzil on the battlefield. Things are not going great, but they're not going horribly either. He's losing some soldiers. He's having to retreat, but they haven't lost their main kind of primary plateau that they're defending yet. So just kind of a little snippet of time with Sigzil. Another bit of Shallan and crew in the spiritual realm, kind of following along behind Dalinar and Navani. Chapter 75 is Zeth in the flashback as well. I think I already bled a little bit into this chapter. Actually, this is the scene where he leaves and has a big fight with his sister where she says, please don't go. And I think that gets us to the end of chapter 75.
Sounds good. Paul, do you have two words, or maybe four words, since we forgot last week, to summarize these chapters?
Well, Trevor, unfortunately not. I actually only have one word, so I'm going to be at a three-word deficit here. Maybe I'll cash those in later. I'm going to store those in the bank for a later chapter.
That's perhaps not how that works.
Nope. Yep. If you're giving me four words for today...
It was a double or nothing today. You can't. There's no rollover words here.
No. They're in the bank.
Your words expire at the end of the month. You have to use them or lose them.
I'm actually earning interest on those words. So by the time we get further along, I'm going to have like 3.5 words.
3.3 words? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so time value of words. I'm going to be word rich here in a little while. And you're just going to be... You're just going to be mad about
compounding interest. Yeah.
Yes. Compounding interest on my words is going to go crazy in the future. Okay. My one word with all this is simply torn. Largely, that is to do with Zeth. Of course, there's a lot of Zeth in this episode, in these chapters. Most pertinent, I feel like, is the dynamic with Zeth and his family, with his sister and father, is quite stressful and torn, and it feels like it's actively tearing more apart. And it's been difficult to read. It's tough chapter to read. Moments to read about. I'm sure it's obviously very stressful for Zeth. And many people probably who read this as well. So that was the main reason, as well as modern day Zeth and our characters being quite torn on what is right, which we talked about last episode a bunch, and all sorts of things. I felt like that was one word that could kind of summarize a bit well.
Elliot, do you have two words?
I sure do. And they are scavenger hunt, because I feel like multiple of our characters have found themselves now on scavenger hunts as they try to track down random things, or maybe not so random things. Zeth being the biggest one, of course, on his overall Shinovar scavenger hunt to try and collect up all the honor blades and complete all the riddles and challenges and battles that he has to do along the way. But then in the flashback, Zeth gets sent on a literal scavenger hunt for little paper clues by his boss, shaman guy, who is literally just testing his obedience. Are you willing to go do goofy things like scavenger hunts for me? It's Zeth, so of course he is. He's just looking to do whatever he's told. And yeah, I had a fancy way to tie Shallan into that. Now I can't quite remember it, but Shallan's also kind of scavenger hunting a bit.
Ada Mishram, obviously, like she's looking for.
Yeah, and like her past and her mom and all that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that real quick. She goes into a vision here and she thinks to herself, man, it's a good thing we're not in my childhood bedroom when we're at this like random meeting place in Urethiru. I was like, all right, Brandon, like just give us the scene. We know what's coming. I thought it was really funny that Shallan muses to herself of like, whew, good thing we're not in my childhood brain.
I think this has officially been the most long running like delay of a scene that we've watched. The next one I could point to, or the next closest, is I feel like with the Sanderlanch of book four of Rhythm of War, I feel like we kept getting who was it? Was it Kaladin or someone in Shadesmar? And it like there'd be a fight sequence and then it'd cut back over to somewhere else, then cut right back and be like, oh, one step further in the fight and then cut back, and it just felt like it took forever to get through it. This is like okay, Brandon, just give us the chapter right here where Shallan like addresses the situation, and then we can move forward. And it has really, it's like, if it hasn't been made clear, we're gonna keep getting more nods to it.
I had a realization in chapter 74, since we're talking about this now. I posed a crazy thought to you guys 3 or 4 episodes ago, which was, I think, Trevor, you said, how in the world is this not confirmed at this point? And my answer back to you was the 1% left that I think could maybe take this a different direction is if Chanarach literally is Shallan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think chapter 74 disproves this. And here's how. So this is a bit where Shallan is watching a scene and she sees Chanarach. Let me read it. Two heralds crested a hill nearby, and Shallan glanced away. Shallan, Vale said inside her. She forced herself to look back at a woman with red hair walking beside Yezrian the king. The implications of this are daunting, Radiant thought. We have to acknowledge them anyway, Vale said. For now, Shallan let herself turn away. It's more teasing of it, right? It's Shallan is seeing this. Obviously, there's something to confront there, the red hair, all these things. But in that scene right there, Renarin and Merlane are literally standing right next to her watching the exact same scene.
Right.
If it is Shallan, they would say something.
And I thought the same previously. Like, if it was Shallan, Dalinar Navani would have said something, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. That somebody would have noticed some point, yes, in history, right? Like, yeah.
So I feel like that's enough to say that crazy idea is not going to fly, which leaves us with the 99% we had left of it's her mom.
I mean, unless you want to make the argument that she could have been like a different persona as Chanarach and lightweaved like a different face, like there's still like a way back door way you could do it, but it's not. There's no way.
I agree. I think we would sooner find out. I'm trying to think of something ridiculous. We'd sooner find out that the stick from Words of Radiance becomes the third bondsmith than we would Shallan to actually be Chanarach herself.
Hey, so we get a stick reference in this episode.
We did do. It was very funny. They said that stick rock spren. What did they say? Rock spren are almost as dumb as stick spren.
And that's saying something. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was hilarious. Actually, I did catch that. That was a great nod.
That was a Syl point of view. Okay. Let's go into the chapter 72 Syl point of view. This is the first Syl point of view we've had, I want to say, since that Rhythm of War interlude. But maybe we've had Syl point of view since then, but I don't think we have. Anyway. We get a Syl point of view, and she's helping Zeth. She has helped Zeth through the Lightweaver riddle. And then as we're walking out, all the acolytes in the Lightweaver monastery are like, oh, you saved us. Thanks. Syl's going through the riddle again in her head of like, one of the illusions is going to kill you, was part of the riddle. And she's like, wait, there's still an issue here. If that riddle is correct, one of these acolytes is still a problem. Turns out the Truth Watcher honor bearer was here collaborating with the Lightweaver honor bearer. They must have like a nice little powwow when Zeth came over the mountains of like, all right, who's going to team up with who? You know, you're going to be here. Truth Watcher honor bearer saves us a nice trip, although Nail's going to make us go there anyway by the end of this episode. But yeah, the Truth Watcher honor bearer attacks us. Kill him, get our sixth blade. Yes, we've got a nice, we need a pack animal for our honor blades at this point. What'd you guys think of the Syl point of view?
I really enjoyed it. I've been a big fan of Syl throughout the whole of the series. She's always been super fun. I had concerns maybe at the start of this book there was some somewhat weird stuff, maybe somewhat posing a romantic situation with her and Kaladin. Anyways, aside from that, I love Sail point of views. Super fun. Absolutely love it. Love the stick spren, everything. I'm glad she caught on to this because the challenge, the Zeth beating this challenge, it was not easy, but once the riddle was solved, once they figured it out, it felt at that point it felt too easy. It felt like, okay, we got it, we did it, and we're leaving. There's no real challenge past that. So I was like, okay, there's got to be another catch, got to be something else. I did not expect this. One thing that threw me off, Trevor, did you notice this? I think the voice, so it was Kate Redding reading this chapter, I believe, and the voice she used for this, this honor bearer, I could be wrong, but I swear it's the same voice for Lyft. And I had a moment of panic thinking that Lyft had appeared in this chapter. And I'm like, hold on, I have to rewind, go back. Lyft is here. I think it's the same voice, and so that's why it threw me off. But I definitely did a double take and was like, something crazy, just like, hold on. You know, so realized it was not Lyft, but it really threw me off there for a couple minutes.
I didn't catch that at all. Not to say that it wasn't there, but no, I didn't think Lyft once. I haven't thought of Lyft once in 3 days in this book.
No, I agree. I don't understand either, but I feel like that voice was distinct enough that I was like, that sounds exactly like Lyft. And so it made me be like, hold on, wait, who's saying what again? And I had to go back for a moment as well. But if not, that would have been weird. That would not have made sense. So I'm glad it was not actually Lyft. I don't know if anyone else listening to the audiobook and noticed that. Maybe it's just me. I could be totally wrong. But definitely was confused there for a good 45 seconds.
What about the breaking the rules that Nail tries to slide in there, and then Zeth and Kaladin are like, no, absolutely not. What'd you guys think of Nail trying to pull a fast one?
I think this is key, actually, because it is specifically Zeth who calls him out on this. Nail does try to, cheating, you're disqualified. And Zeth is the one that speaks up, not Kaladin, not Nightblood, or whoever's all been kind of weighing in on the other side of these arguments. It's Zeth who kind of speaks up and says, hold on. I asked earlier if there were rules, and I got told that there was not. And the small amount of rules we do know are not this. So he was not having that, which I think was a good sign that Zeth is not intellectually going down without a fight here. He's still wrestling with, where do I need to be on this whole scale? And he's ready to jump in and say, hold on a second, here's what I know, when he's sure about something.
Yeah, I included Kaladin in the objection, but I think you're right. It's just Zeth's having a, you know, independent thought of, no, I'm not cheating. There are no rules, as I've been told by the honor bearer is trying to kill me. So I'm calling you on that one, Nail. So yeah.
I have a question about this for y'all. So we are getting these scenes with Zeth and Nail, which I'm a big fan of. I'm grateful that Zeth has stepped up. I was afraid that Nail coming into the picture, it would mean Zeth goes back to being fully obedient no matter what, you know, basically reverting to not thinking for himself whatsoever. And it doesn't seem like that's the case, which makes me very relieved. But have we seen anything else or heard anything else from Zeth's spren? I could be wrong. I don't remember anything throughout these chapters regarding the spren, maybe except for a brief mention here or there. but we haven't. And I feel like this, whole sprint situation is getting very increasingly suspect to me. Like, the sprint was obviously extremely fishy, and we were not a fan of it leading up to this point. Then Spren leaves, comes back with Nail, having been a tattletale, right? A snitch. And then we haven't heard anything. I think maybe there's a mention that they're not really on talking terms. I don't know. I feel like it's eerily missing. And so I don't know if y'all had any thoughts or predictions on that. I feel like there might be some reveal or something special that happens with the Spren. But I got no ideas. Other than I noticed Spren seems notably not around.
I feel like somebody on their board has a Spren debonds a Radiant. And I wonder if you're talking about Zeth's Honor Spren, right, Paul? I'm not completely off track here.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Zeth's Honor Spren. I'm saying we have not heard from this Honor Spren in quite some time.
I wonder if this Honor Spren might actually abandon Zeth by the end of the book. Because we know the Honor Spren's like definitely on Nail's side. And if Nail gets kicked out of this little troop, then he might take Zeth's Honor Spren with him.
And that is you, Trevor, that actually has that on your bingo board. So I guess now there's something for you to root for.
Ah. I guess,
if you want to win bingo.
Of course I want to win bingo. What kind of question is that?
Well, maybe that's just, like, you would.
Just because I'm behind doesn't mean I don't want to win, Elliot. Come on.
I didn't mean to imply that. I was trying to give you an out if you didn't want to root against Zeth. Like, if that was going to be looked at as, like, you know, kicking Zeth while he's down kind of thing. So you can root against Zeth because it helps your bingo board. Or maybe that's rooting for Zeth. I don't know.
Yeah, that I feel like rooting for the Spren to leave. This is the first time I've ever said this, that rooting for the Spren to leave might be a good thing. We don't know the dynamics of the High Spren. We don't know the dynamics of what's going on with this Spren, if this is unique to it or if they're all like this. But either way, it does not. All my spidey senses of this is not right have been going haywire. Just feel like it's not good. We can keep moving forward, but I have another question as well. Really, really trying to figure out what's going to happen in our modern day storyline with Zeth. Nail seems, I'm going to say this lightly. Nail seems reasonable here. In that he somewhat admits a fault, somewhat. I'm not going to say he's reasonable, he's good. I don't think that's the case. That's not what I think at all. However, they've somewhat gotten along and they've succeeded in getting another Honor Blade or two and are moving along their journey. Do you think that will keep up? That they will make it through the rest of this pilgrimage with Nail? And if not, do you think that there will be a physical altercation, like a physical, potentially a physical battle between Zeth and Nail if it doesn't work out or if things come to a head? Or is Nail just going to like storm off? Maybe they don't fight, but he leaves. What do y'all think could or would happen?
I would be highly, very surprised. I would be very surprised if Nail like attacks our heroes, because Nail is Nail and he's not gonna do that because it's illegal, right? However, having Nail hamstring the quest, absolutely. Like that's absolutely gonna happen. He's gonna go meet up with Ishar. They're gonna give him a trial that they can't win. Like that's absolutely gonna happen. I don't think there's gonna be a physical thing.
You don't think so? Because wasn't Nail the one to like assassinate the cobbler and all this stuff? I know the cobbler wasn't a Knight Radiant, or sorry, wasn't a Skybreaker. Wow. I don't remember all the rules. Why couldn't he potentially try to stop them? I feel like Nail would be the most likely Radiant to do such a thing. Except maybe Ishar. I feel like he's kind of off the deep end with that.
You might be right, but I think all the rules changed when the Everstorm came in Edge Dancer, right? And Lyft is like, you know, look at the sky, that the Voidbringers have returned, blah, blah, blah. And then all of Nail's rules go out the window of him killing Radiance or whatever he was doing. It's been a long time since I read that book. But Nail is going to try his best to kill the quest without killing the heroes, I think.
Fair. Well, do you have any thoughts, Elliot, on what you think might happen or if anything will change up like that?
I don't know. I'm hesitant to guess now. I feel like we're about to enter into Sanderlanch territory based on previous books and pacing and things. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm reserving judgment until we get a bit more info, I think.
Fair, yeah. And I don't want to get us too far off topic, so I'll pass the reins back over to Trevor. But those were the two thoughts that were really spinning around in my head, so I wanted to share them with y'all.
All right, let's go back and talk about Shallan before we go on.
Real quick, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about.
Yeah.
So this is in chapter 72. It's like before we move on to Shallan and others. It's noted that we've got six shard blades, honor blades. And they're even like talking in the scene like, oh, we're at 6 of 10. And then somebody weighs in saying, well, it's actually 6 of 9 because Odium has corrupted the Windrunner blade. And that's news to us, I think. And it's mentioned like, yeah, what happened there?
I mean, it's kind of news. It's news to the term corrupted, and if that's being used correctly, would be news. But the fact that the Windrunner Honor Blade is kind of excluded from our quest here, Moash has got it still, and you know it's not in the temple. Like that's not all that's all well known, right?
Okay, so we think that's simply just, well, the Windrunner Blade is not here, so obviously it's not part of the quest.
That's what I would assume, and maybe it's tied to Yezrian actually being fully dead now, and so it's not actually tied to this whole Oath Pack thing anymore. Maybe. I don't know. But maybe it does have more meaning than that, but I didn't take it as like a huge reveal that it's now Odium's blade or anything. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Okay. I'm good with that for now.
Okay. Shallan and Renarin and Relaine. Shallan's time clock is way off. It's not like she has a watch like Dalinar and Navani do, but she thinks to herself, oh, we've only been in here like 10 hours or 12 hours or whatever. Adolin's just prepping for his fight in Azamir. We're in day 6. Was that significant to you guys that her clock is way off?
Frankly, I was really happy to hear this. Happy to hear this from the outside perspective that we as the reader have, right? I was thinking about it briefly of like, okay, my understanding is going to the spiritual realm is supposed to end up being super trippy, super difficult to orient yourself, understand how much time has passed and all the things. And I'm glad to see that that is the case. I was a little afraid that it'd be too easy on them and they'd essentially know. They did good preparing with like the watch and everything. I think Dalinar is the one that has that. Is that right? He has like a tethered watch or something so he can keep track of time.
Yeah.
I appreciate that for like story's validity sake. I imagine that there's some point where I'm anticipating they will get out of the spiritual realm and probably all together at some point, maybe reunited. No telling, but at least Dalinar has a clock. Everyone else, I'm like, I'd be more concerned if they're like, yeah, it's been roughly 6 days. or whatever, if they like knew it, you know? So yeah, I'm all for it.
I don't know if it has super big implications while we're still in the spiritual realm that their time clock is way off, but when they jump out at whatever it is, day 8 or day 9 or whatever, it'll be jarring for, you know, everyone who doesn't have a watch on them. All right. Elliot, in the outline, you have Shallan and Renarin discuss like matter and Stormlight all being like the same thing. This has been discussed before, just not by these characters, right? Like that's
yes.
This is all investiture and it's all one thing. So that this wasn't news to me, but
not necessarily news in the physics of it all, other than I'm still trying to wrap my head around, like, what is the spiritual realm? What are the nuances and the rules associated with the spiritual realm? We've seen enough of the cognitive realm to start to kind of piece together how we think things work there. Even though we've spent several hundred pages now in the spiritual realm, it's still very fuzzy what all is going on here. So as they sit down and kind of talk through this, it was helping me kind of picture in my mind how maybe this works, because they're theorizing that when they go into the spiritual realm, they become Stormlight or Investiture. And when they go back to the physical realm, they talk about their bodies having to reform in a physical way back from the Investiture that they've turned into. And then they ask other questions like, well, if that's true, can I grab something here? And if I can get that thing to also reform back with me when I go, is that possible as well? And it was just kind of helping me think through, okay, the spiritual realm really just is this giant Investiture soup.
That's an excellent way of putting it. I will now be thinking about the spiritual realm as just a big Investiture soup. That's perfect. That's the term I've been looking for.
All right. So if you go to the spiritual realm and you get to grab a souvenir, what are you guys grabbing?
One of those honor blades, right?
No, that's a cop-out answer. Come on. I'm talking about like a candlestick or like, you know, like a rock. What are you grabbing?
You want me to grab a candle or a rock instead of an honor blade, Trevor?
Yes, I do.
What are you thinking? Come on now.
I need a memorable mug, of course.
Yeah, like, Paul needs another mug.
Yeah,
that's one of those fair, touristy, yeah. Was made in China, but they're selling it to you in wherever you're at mug.
Paul needs a made in ashen mug.
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah, can we get it from other places? Like, could I get a souvenir from like Threnody without having to go there?
Go get a silver knife.
Yeah, I could go for that.
Okay. Yeah. That's a better answer than an honor blade.
I'd still want an honor blade though. That's just too cool to not. But anyways, whatever, Trevor.
Chapter 74, another brief Shallan section. They have invented their new strategy to send in a light weaving instead of themselves, so that that's a little bit more safe. And then at the end of the chapter, Shallan's like, all right, we're scrapping that idea because I see Mishram. So I'm going to go meet Mishram. And that's how the scene ends. We have a Mishram sighting, gentlemen, probably. Finally, what are you guys' expectations on what's about to happen, presumably in chapter 76?
I think we might get a little bit of Mishram backstory. I think that might be what's heading our way, because help me understand this. I was trying to track with, and I'm not sure I fully did. She didn't think she saw actual Mishram's prison. She thought she saw Mishram in the vision.
Correct. So that there's a battle happening, and she thought Mishram was present in the flashback vision.
Right. So like in the scene, we're about to see the character of Mishram enter. Or she sees Mishram in the scene. But it's not.
she finally asked the questions, what were the unmade before they were the unmade? Like, somebody finally said that on page. I was like, thank you, finally. And I hope we're about to go find out.
I agree, Trevor. That's exactly what I want to find out. I'm really hoping that's what it is, but I'm skeptical that now is when we'd find that out. If we find that out, I think that's got to be end of the book, like Sander, closer to the Sander Lynch thing. I have my wish list of what I want to happen, and then I have more tailored expectations of what will happen in this chapter. What I want to figure out is truly more about Ba-Edo Mishram's motives, because it's alluded that Ba-Edo Mishram could defeat or usurp or some way replace Odium, which sounds like a great thing. But everything we've seen is like, no, she's really kind of treacherous and bad. I don't know if that's a misnomer or if that's legit. So I want clarity on that. I feel like we're not going to get that. I don't know what will happen, but I feel like we're not gonna see that. What I think we might see is, I'm not sure. I wonder if we... I really don't know what to expect. I have high hopes, and I don't know. I guess I'm ready to be disappointed if it doesn't happen, and I'm ready to be super excited if things do happen. So, no idea.
Anything else on the Shallan stuff? Okay. We get a brief Sigzil section before we get into our Zeth flashbacks. Who has some named Windrunners die on their bingo board? Because we just got one. I believe, Elliot, you got your first one. Sigzil's squire, who is named and then he dies, so it counts,
I was going to do some research on this because my bingo tile says more than three previously named Windrunners die.
Yes.
I need to go look up if this dude has been named before because I don't remember.
No, I think this still counts because what I meant by that was, so Kaladin on his bridge runs, right? Well, you'd go on a bridge run and then he'd come back and then think to himself, oh man, blah, 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 blah died. Darn it. That wouldn't count. But if we meet a character and then they instantly die, I think that does count. They were like, that's what I meant by previously named instead of like a list of people who have died and then they're named like that. That's what I meant.
Like seeing named characters die.
Correct, which we did do.
Yep, there's one. And it's a very sad scene. I mean, Sigzil has a hard time with it. He kind of goes a little wild.
Yes, and it is confirmed that Moloch, our death rattle, is here. So we're going to get to see some cool death rattles on the Shattered Plains, for old time's sake.
Yeah, so this is like hinted at before it's announced, right? Isn't there like a death rattle spouted off earlier in the chapter? And as soon as that happened, I was like, oh my gosh, hold on. That was a death rattle. Oh my gosh, you know, I'm glad they said it out right and I wasn't just going crazy. I'm curious. And he also warns you to like, okay, if Moloch is here, that could mean that there are other unmade here as well. So Sigzil is really having, I feel like, the toughest run of these battles. If unmade are starting to show up and there's a thunderclast, I'm like, that's one of the most dire situations we've seen, if not the most, I think. So poor guy.
And he gives up his Plateau 4 a day sooner than he wanted to. So he's been intending to give ground so that he holds Plateau 1 and 2, but he's given up 4 too soon in his plans. So things are going well for him.
Absolutely. Slightly off topic in this chapter, I've really, you know, I mentioned that I think that Kate Redding was using the same voice for the honor bearer that we see earlier as she does for Lyft. Could be wrong about that, but that's what I was hearing. That's what my brain was registering. In this chapter, I feel like this was like somewhat of a fever dream to listen to on the audiobook. I don't know if it felt like that for you, Trevor, but all of a sudden, I think it was, oh gosh, I think it was Layton that all of a sudden has like, I live in Texas and like, it was like the Texas like country accent, like talking like about this. And it was just really thick. And he was just like, well, Callie didn't always used to say. And I was just like, hold on, where did this come from? When, since when is he from Southeast Texas? Like, where, what is going on here? And I was really thrown for a loop. As well as, I thought I was going, so it was unfortunate. We got the loss of Deddy. Is that how, the name of Sigsel's squire? I feel like at the opening of this chapter, they said the name like 85 times. Like all I remember hearing while listening to this chapter was Deddy, 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 Deddy. Like I felt like I was going crazy in this chapter listening to the audiobook. I can't lie. I'm sure if I go back, it's not actually that bad. But like initial reaction, I was like, I'm struggling to keep my head screwed on in this chapter. I thought it was wild. I felt like there were new voices and all sorts of stuff going on. I don't know if you had any kind of similar feeling or reaction, Trevor. Did you at least notice like the country voice I'm talking about?
I wish I could say I had, and I'm now going to go back and re-listen, but
I think you absolutely need to listen to that dialogue at least. It is like, yeah. I'm like, it was legit. It was some cowboy talk.
I was moderately distracted at the time. I was in the hospital with little sleep. So that could have distracted from my experience. So maybe I should go back and re-listen.
I give you a pass for that. But yeah, definitely go back. I'm curious if anyone else who is listening to the audiobook noticed that. I'm really calling out all the audiobook drama here in this episode, which I've never had before, because Michael Kramer and Kate Redding do such an immaculate job, and this is not saying there was a problem. It was just like I was really doing some double takes in some of these chapters with some recent changes.
Alrighty. Two Zeth flashback chapters. And These are such a roller coaster ride, man. They go up and then they go down and then they go sideways. Like I don't know where to end up with these Zeth flashback chapters, but Elliot, earlier in the episode, you said scavenger hunt. He's sent on this little trivial pursuit quest here. And then later in chapter 75, he has some heart to heart with his family. Where do you guys want to start?
I actually want to start by pointing out something that's very obvious, but I think changes how I'm starting to think about some of these flashback chapters. We get another time jump in our story. 2 years goes by from when we saw the last time we saw this young Zeth. He's now 21 by my math. We've skipped through 10 years worth of flashbacks for him. I think when we first saw him, I think he was 11, I think we were told.
Yes.
And now he's 21. This is not kid Zeth anymore. This is now adult Zeth, young adult Zeth, but well, very much make his own decisions, make his own life Zeth.
So whoever he's talking to calls him out on that too, right? He's like, why haven't your morals progressed from 11-year-old don't want to move the rock Zeth?
But yeah, that's the whole conversation with Civi is the name. Is that how you pronounce that one?
Yeah, I think so. She accuses him of that, of why.
Yep.
why haven't you made concessions on your morals like everyone else has? And he's like, no, life should be black and white still. And he's 21.
Well, and to maybe attack that from a different angle, they end up talking a lot about nuance. Is it possible that life has nuance and that certain actions might be right in certain situations and wrong in others? And Zeth does very much get talked around to the answer is, well, yeah, life is like that. And it even brings him to say something that I kind of related with a lot. He literally says in the chapter, I just want things to be easy like when I was young. And I think he's referencing that black and whiteness of when you're young, it feels like life is one-dimensional, like in a good sense. It's life is going in this direction. I'm moving in this way. When I deviate from this path is bad. I need to get back on track and I go. Whereas the more adulting you have to do in your life, the more you realize there's a lot of branching paths and there's a lot of conflicting paths. And there's a lot of, well, a step forward on that path is actually a step backwards on this other equally good path. And I just found myself kind of nodding my head and going, me too, bro. Life has a lot of tough decisions. I do sometimes yearn for the days when life was simpler.
Isn't that the truth? Oh, yeah. No, it is. It's tough, especially seeing through Zeth's lens. You know, you're introduced to the Zeth flashback by seeing him dancing and like on his little rural farm with his sheep. And it's just like, I feel like it's a great comparison to opening the Lord of the Rings in the Shire. You know, like you see this kind of peaceful life. I also have to, of course, make the joke. There's a joke in that a lot of me and my friends have about when you're young and growing up, you want to be like an elf or something like that. You want to be this like super ninja, cool craftsman lifestyle, all this stuff. And as you get older, you're like, no, I want to be a hobbit. Like I want to relax and have food and a garden. Like that's like it, you know? And I feel like in real life, like that's such a thing of, you know, thinking of simpler times whenever life gets really crazy and chaotic and doesn't seem to get easier over time. But then as a storytelling element, starting with such like a peaceful, serene, like idyllic situation, life is really powerful as you see a story progress and as you see characters progress. So yeah, it really feels a bit reminiscent to that. Like starting with a wonderful, peaceful life, ending with lifelong trauma, you know, it gets tough. It's tough out there.
Zeth is off to the Windrunner honor bearer to go fight him. Is that correct? Did I catch that right?
I think so. I think Sivvy is even more direct than that. She says, basically implies that the Windrunner honor bearer is not following the rules or has gone off on their own or needs to be replaced. And basically says, Zeth, we'd like you to go on this pilgrimage. He actually has to do two pilgrimages. I don't know if you guys followed this carefully. I noted this down and went back and read it again. He has to complete a pilgrimage to prove that he's worth facing against the Windrunner honor bearer. Then okay. He has to do that. He has to face the Windrunner honor bearer, defeat him. Then after he does that, he has to go on another pilgrimage to prove that he's worthy to be the bearer of that blade. Otherwise they will take it back from him. So it's like a two-stage thing. And okay. he even thinks to himself, oh my goodness, that's gonna take me a decade.
Yeah, I do remember that. How old is Zeth when we meet him? It might take him a decade.
I think it will, because I just mentioned he's 21 now, but the start of our flashback still says 16 years ago.
Yeah.
So we still have 16 years worth of stuff to cover.
Yeah.
Well, I guess 14 years. I think we know what those last year or two is because we've read it.
No, it's like 10 years. We know what the last 8 years have been like, because the him assassinating Gavilar is like 8 years ago by now.
Oh, true. Yep.
Because so they spend like six on the Shattered Plains.
Yep. Got it.
So yeah. So if he goes and hunts down the Windrunner Honor Bearer and then fails his second pilgrimage, maybe that's how he becomes truthless or something like that. But he still gets the sword. I guess we'll find out.
I've been really wondering how this is going to happen. I was excited to see that this is where his flashback story is going, because it's a touch point. It's like, okay, we know he has that honor blade, so we're starting to connect the pieces. The two ends of the story are starting to meet. But yeah, I don't know how the whole truthless thing is going to come about. I'm expecting it still to be tied to the voice that he's hearing, maybe more so even than his own understanding. I have no idea, but that's my guess, is he's going to be more so goaded into that than anything else. That's my prediction on how he'll become truthless. And then he will revere his Oathstone rock, because he has a great reverence for rocks. He even finds, is this the same rock that we see, like, this is this later, but he like picks up a rock, or maybe he doesn't pick it up, he like prays to a rock and thinks it came over from Ashen or something.
That rock is interesting. Kind of.
Is interesting.
Well,
me when I go to a national park.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That rock is interesting. I'm definitely using that.
There's a lot of rocks in the story, and they're more significant to the Shin people than others. And so the first time I read this section in chapter 75, I kind of blazed right over it, because it's Zeth is praying to this rock. It's like described like a geode. It has crystals kind of busting out from the center of it. It's like 2 feet large. But then the second time I read it, there's a little blip there where he's praying to this rock, and then he gets some thoughts kind of injected into his head. And it's as if the rock remembers being carried by terrified people. I don't know why that was a tongue twister. And it struck me the second time around, I don't know if this is important at all, but we've seen terrified people carrying rocks as they stepped through a portal from Ashen to Roshar.
True. That's where my brain went.
Me too.
So I don't know if that matters, but was this one of those rocks?
My gut instinct, like in the moment as I heard this, was that this was like the rock that they like hone in on in the vision that Dalinar and Navani were in, right? That was different though. That was a rock that Hoyd had and like was in his pocket, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the rock that Hoyd specifically carried himself.
That's right. Okay. But other people may have brought rocks. It's probably one of those.
I'm now wondering if all Oathstones are from Ashen, maybe.
That's actually a cool little theory. I kind of like that. Of like some extra like weight given to it, and the Shin may have like a reverence for the like there's significance there. I could absolutely buy into that. So I'm like, surely there's got to be some I mean, their whole culture, like, reveres stone and rock highly. So it could just be any rock, and they're like, yep, this is the Oath Stone, and your allegiance is to whoever holds it. I can believe that without a doubt. That's been my current understanding. But I could also believe that there's something bigger like that. That would make sense to me, that they'd have a higher reverence or could understand that it was not from Roshar specifically. Who knows?
Towards the end of chapter 75, it really just hones in on Zet's family for, I feel like, maybe one of the last times. His sister comes and confronts him, telling him not to go after the Windrunner. And then Zeth talks to his dad, and Naturo's like trying to come with him again. And Zeth is trying to push back that, no, you need to. Naturo's the mayor of wherever that town is nearby. And Zeth's like, please have a life. Like, you need to stay here. And he blames himself for Naturo and his mom separating. And there's some backstory of, no, they were having issues long before they found a rock and, you know, stuff like that. So that I couldn't help but feel this is one of the last Zeth family chapters we're going to get. Maybe that's not true, but that's how it felt to me, that there was some painful goodbyes and confrontations here.
This is where I felt like it was a little important for me to remember we're not talking about 11-year-old Zeth anymore. We're talking about 21-year-old Zeth. And Naturo kind of uprooting their family to help protect his 11-year-old son. Very honorable, very good father in those moments, I think. Naturo kind of uprooting their lives to follow around 21-year-old Zeth? I don't know about that one. And like, I honestly say, I honestly don't quite know what I think about that. Is it pretty cool in some senses that Naturo is very dedicated to his son and wanting to help him and maybe feeling bad for the terrible stuff he's had to go through in his childhood? Like all those things, yes. But then at the same time, at some point, Zeth does have to kind of step out and be his own man and find his own way in life and, you know, leave the nest kind of thing. So at some point, Naturo probably does have to stop following him around, I think.
I hadn't thought of this through the lens of Zeth being 21 at this point. To me, thus far, it's logically made sense of, and I do kind of feel bad, like, reading these chapters. It originally made me feel really bad about whenever this first happened. You remember way back to when they discover the rock, and Naturo presents the question to Zeth of, like, what should we do? And we kind of talked a bit about, like, okay, was that unfair of him? I do, like, looking back, I would clearly say from my view that I think Naturo is good and was doing a good job, you know, like, basically, it wasn't like a double, there wasn't an ulterior motive or something like unfair being pinned on Zeth, in my opinion. You know, whatever. Anyways, I think Naturo has done well, and following him initially, absolutely, like, had a lot of respect, like, you know, the whole thing. It's the reason why I've felt like this has been all good is because at that point, when he made the original decision that we are going to move to be with Zeth when he's like 11 or whatever, right? You know, they kind of uproot their lives and go on. So since then, that's been the situation. That's been Naturo's occupation, and everything has been wrapped up in that. So it makes sense that it's like, okay, well, there's not really like a home we're just moving back to, like, casually, I guess. I feel like that's kind of old news. So it makes sense in my head for him to move on. I did not actually realize that Zeth is 21 at this point. I'm still thinking like late teenager, you know, like 17, 18. And I'm sure I have no idea what the dynamic of this is in on Roshar. No idea, to be honest, what kind of social dynamics or things we have. It seems all over the place because you have children being drafted into war and you have like all sorts of stuff. And so basically I'm saying I give Netero a pass. I do agree that Zeth has to come into his own and has to stand independently. I could not agree more. But also given the context with everything going on with their family, I know it's like the whole challenge here is Netero with his daughter, with Elid. And that's been really like challenging and complicated, but yeah, I don't know. That's why I chose my word torn. I'm just like, I'm torn in multiple ways as the reader, and the family is like going through quite a bit. And it's one of those situations that it's like tough. I feel like there's not a clear cut. This is what you do, I guess.
Anything else?
I think that's all I've got. We talked earlier about how this is clearly Zeth's book, and we're getting into it for sure with the Zeth stuff. So I'm excited for more of that. Where are we going with past Zeth and present Zeth? It's kept my interest throughout, which has been a good thing.
I hope that Netero decides to step away from Zeth and become the mayor of some small town in the corner, and then that's how we meet him in present day. That'd be so nice. Just to like, oh, hi dad, how you doing? Great. Moving on. That's what I want to see for Netero. I don't think it's going to happen, but
yeah, we need like a support, like an emotional support group for like Lyrin and Netero coming together, you know. I think that's what we need to happen.
All right, let's call it there. Next week we have 76 and 77, which ends day 6 of Wind and Truth. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
On we go.
Toodles.